Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, and at the controls is our super producer, Jason Ruggiero.
So good to be here today.
And if you're curious about any medical maladies, soon to be Dr. Garrett Britton is back, phoning it in today, to tell you all about them.
Oh, he's in the studio. If you don't get the joke, check out the Twitter feed for Tri-State BB.
We've got a picture of Dr. Garrett in the studio today. It's an interesting little setup.
His presence is really felt here today.
I'm there in spirit.
Oh, yeah.
Well, gentlemen, a New York Mets employee asked CougarLife.com to support David Wright in All-Star Game voting after he was named by the website as MLB's hottest. How does that make you feel if you're David Wright?
You know, we have failed a couple times to start the podcast today. So I'm not going to lie. You've asked me this three times, I think. I still don't know how to respond.
You haven't come up with a good response.
I haven't gotten out of this.
Well, I think it helped him get to third base.
Hey! There it is. Good response.
There. Zing.
All right. Well, now here's my question. Does David Wright have a wife or girlfriend?
I think he's recently engaged, I think. David Wright's recently engaged. And it made me wonder if he met his fiance on CougarLife.com.
Yeah, because that would be perfect.
And now he's a cabana boy.
Him or her?
He is. He's come out in his Speedo clean in the pool.
Oh, no.
That's where he met his fiance on Cougar Life. That's the narrative I invented.
Yeah, if that was true, they would have a lifetime worth of ads. Their marketing department could just pack up
shop. It would just be David Wright. That's all their advertisements would
be.
Well, on today's show, we're going to get our medical updates from Dr. Garrett. We're going to have a lot of discussion about what's going on with Pittsburgh and Cleveland. And then we'll give a real quick Seawolves shout out. But we got a lot of stuff to get to, so let's get right into it with our medical updates from Dr. Garrett.
Is there a doctor in the house?
I'm not a doctor yet, but I play one on the internet.
Okay, well let me tell you, the triage unit has been busy this week. We're going to start off with Cleveland, with Lou Marson, who was pulled from his AAA rehab assignment on June 12th.
Oh, the saga of Blue Lou.
It just won't end for Lou. So Lou's been out since late April with this right shoulder soreness that we've been following. I guess they decided to bring out the big guns and sent him down to Birmingham, Alabama, where he's going to be seen by Dr. James Andrews.
Oh, no. That's not a good sign.
It usually isn't. So he's going to be evaluated, and I'm sure something's going to come of this. As soon as we find out, we'll let our listeners know.
If I was the Indians, the first place I would look to get to the bottom of this is the bottom of Yan Gomes' locker. I would check out down there in the bottom there, see if there's a Lou Marson voodoo doll under the old T-shirts and whatnot.
Just full of pins.
Full of pins in the right shoulder.
I'm sure he's not complaining.
No. Not that I don't think they're ever gonna send Yan Gomes back for Lou Marson now, but he's just trying to take out a little insurance policy.
Now, it seems like Marson's been having trouble with this shoulder for quite a while, and I think it predated his this collision he had at home plate.
Yes, it did.
But I was watching that video today, and when he came down, he kind of came down on the right side. So I wonder if that kind of exacerbated this ongoing problem he had, and he just hasn't come back from it.
Well, yeah, it's very possible. You know, it's like I saw, I think it was in an article from the Plain Dealer, the way they put it is his home plate collision with, was it Desmond Jennings?
Yeah.
With Desmond Jennings didn't help.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way to put it.
Certainly not.
That didn't help. Now, we don't know what that did to the shoulder, but it certainly didn't help.
And it seems like all the imaging has been negative. You know, they're not showing any tears. But like I've said before, when you have inflammation, you know, it may obscure underlying pathology. So hopefully Dr. Andrews will be able to give him an answer.
Well, I guess he's the guy you go to when you can't figure anything else out.
So then, real quickly, Brett Myers.
Oh, boy.
Was placed on 60-day DL, presumably to make a roster spot for someone I was going to cover under Pittsburgh, but now with Cleveland, John McConnell.
Johnny Mac!
He is, and he's bringing his low back pain and elbow soreness and everything else that goes with being old with him.
Yeah, he packed up his old man disease and brought it with him in his carry-on.
So I think he played the other night.
He did. They activated him. He was in the game Wednesday night. He came in to replace Mark Reynolds, third base. Sounds about right. And, of course, they had the obligatory, you know, like, days of yore moment from the Indians broadcasters on TV about, oh, you remember when John McDonald was young? And he had a chance to play every day when Omar got hurt back whatever year it was. And then he hurt his
90.
Knee. I did learn through that remembrance segment, we'll call it, that John McDonald back, you know, in the 90s, he had microfracture surgery on his knee, which I thought was interesting because I've never really, other than Carlos Beltran, that's the only other person I've ever seen like fully recover
right
from a microfracture on their knee.
Yeah.
I mean, well, jury's still out on Grady Sizemore, I guess. But
yeah.
And then maybe that's what they were trying to say, is that he never did fully recover. You know, that was his shot, and this is as good as it gets
where he
now.
Landed. Bigger news, Zach McAllister.
No. Ruined my day.
Out with a sprained right middle finger. He's going to be seen by Dr. Thomas Graham, who's a renowned hand surgeon currently with the Cleveland Clinic. He was scratched from Saturday's game and placed on the 15 DL. Now, it didn't seem like this injury was that severe, but then they placed him on the 15-day DL, and now he's going to see Dr. Graham. It makes you wonder if it is pretty severe.
Well, you know, Indians fans just, I think, are on the edge of their seat over this whole thing because Adam Miller had his career completely derailed by a finger injury. Alex White, I guess we can say, had his career derailed by a finger injury. He's never pitched as well as he did for the four starts or so before that,
yeah,
in the last 2 years. And both of those started out with, it's not a big deal. Just some rest should be able to handle it. You know, so it's like nobody's really believing that right now. Nobody's going to believe it until he's back and pitching the way he was before.
And then Asdrubal Cabrera, placed on a 15-day DL with a right quadricep strain. Francona said that he's likely going to be out 3 to 4 weeks, and they're not basing that on his injury so much as what they've seen in the past with quadriceps injuries.
Now,
it could be sooner than that, or it could be a little bit longer.
Now, how serious is a quadricep injury? Because I watched the game when he pulled up, and it was the classic, like, sniper shot. Like, he's just running down the first baseline and then grabs his leg, and he's just done.
Well, the quadriceps is probably one of the largest muscle groups in the body. So you have to imagine, in order to strain it, there has to be quite a bit of force acting on it.
Well, see, and I'm a little suspicious, too, because he has been dealing with a sore quadricep, which essentially, to me, means it was already strained, for about a week or two before that. So, to me, I'm like, the way you looked when you ran and the fact that you're already injured makes me really wonder if he tore it.
Right, right. We're going to see, you know, like we said with strains before, if it's just a true strain and just a stretching of the muscle, it's not going to be that bad. If it's a tear, they really, you know, don't want to work them at all.
Right.
You can imagine, you know, the quadriceps is used, you know, just by taking a step.
Right.
So it's going to be hard not to exacerbate a tear if that's what it is.
Yeah. I guess the other day in the clubhouse, he was sitting on a chair playing catch.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly right.
So that pretty much speaks for itself.
And then last on the docket for Cleveland.
More. Oh, great. An embarrassment of riches.
What's that?
An embarrassment of riches.
Yeah.
So many injuries, we have to just keep going.
Chris Perez.
Oh, gosh.
who were expecting to have a new diagnosis of glaucoma.
The Rocky River police are checking with his family physician as we speak for that diagnosis.
So he's got this right rotator cuff tendonitis that we're following. He was able to throw off the mound this past Tuesday, and he's going to throw tomorrow, which will be Friday. And depending on how that goes, he's probably going to have a likely rehab stint before coming back. But does it matter?
Well, you know, this is my thing with Chris Perez, not to go on a long... I'm not going to get into the drug thing, because that's a whole different discussion.
Yeah, we'll get to Chris Perez.
But as far as his injury and does it matter, my feeling regarding Chris Perez is I don't think we have seen Chris Perez pitch this year healthy.
Yeah.
You know, he had the shoulder problem in spring training. He had some other problems crop up on him. I just don't think at any point this year he's been really healthy. And so as much as I question Chris Perez's personality and decision-making, I'm not ready to rule out his effectiveness as a pitcher, like, completely, just because I don't think he's actually been healthy this year.
Yeah.
If he comes back healthy, you know, that would be great, because the Indians' bullpen could definitely use another arm. It'd be nice if he learned how to throw left-handed while he was out, but, you know, we'll take whatever we can get at this point.
Okay.
Now, what's going on with Pittsburgh? We have some breaking news with the Buccos here.
It's been busy just today. Two big names coming up. A.J. Burnett placed on 15-day DL with right calf strain. Now, this is troublesome because he's right-handed, and it's that right leg. And the calf, you know, if you watch him go through the moves on the mound, your calf, you know, is a pivotal muscle group for going through those movements. So this really could affect him. Hopefully it's just a minor strain. There's nothing to worry about. You know, I'm sure they'll rest him and image it. So we'll follow that. The other big name, Starling Marte, scratched from today's game with left rib discomfort. Now, that's kind of vague. I'm suspecting it's either an oblique injury or an intercostal strain. It's hard to tell with the description they're giving.
They must have picked up their injury reporting techniques from the Penguins.
Yeah, that's right.
Lower body strain.
Less is better. I don't expect this to be anything serious, but we'll follow it. Yanmar Gomez, this is kind of a story from earlier. On June 2nd, he was pulled with right forearm tightness and was placed on a 15-day DL. They did an MRI that showed no ligamentous damage, which is great news. He's expected to make a rehab start with Indianapolis tonight, Thursday, and we're going to keep an eye on that forearm tightness. Doesn't look like any structural damage, so he should be all right.
That's definitely good news for the Pirates.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about Jared Hughes? What's going on with Jared?
Jared Hughes was called up from AAA on June 3rd and was for the shoulder inflammation. This seems to be the word of the month. He was placed on a 15-day DL on June 8th for right shoulder inflammation, and he was quoted as saying that his shoulder is improving daily. So we'll see. You know, it sounds like thumbs up, but we'll see. As far as the injury, it's just inflammation. Imaging didn't show any structural damage to the rotator cuff, which is good. James McDonald, on rehab assignment, AAA, placed on DL for shoulder inflammation as well. And I think he's kind of been back and forth with that.
Yeah, I think they need a shrink to kind of help fix his problems. I don't know. I don't know whether a medical doctor's the the best person to consult for James McDonald's problems, but
he got beat around in that rehab start, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, he hasn't. Yeah.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Then Jose Tabata.
Hey, I haven't heard that name in a while.
Yeah. In case you're wondering what he's up to nowadays.
Hurdle told the Pittsburgh Tribune Review that Tabata is in a holding pattern in his recovery from an oblique injury.
This holding pattern. I thought isn't that something that they describe planes flying flying over airports in holding patterns?
Exactly.
What's interesting was he was cleared for physical activity on May
30th. But not cleared to land.
They said, "You're good to go, buddy. Make it happen." And he's been shut down since then. And that's kind of unusual for an oblique injury. So there may be something more going on, or, it's hard to say. That's unusual to see this with an oblique injury. So we'll follow that closely. Last up for Pittsburgh is Wandy Rodriguez, placed on the 15-day DL for left forearm inflammation. The imaging showed no ligamentous injury, no tears or anything like that. He was forced out of last Wednesday's game against the Braves. And the big reason I want to talk about him was him going out was what allowed Gerrit Cole's start on Tuesday.
Which, if you don't follow us on the Twitter, our Tri-State staff was at Gerrit Cole's start, which is going to be a real treat to be talking about here in a minute.
Tri-State trifecta.
Mm-hmm.
So he's on the 15-day DL, and we'll see what happens.
But there was no structural damage, so I'm assuming that means that with a little bit of rest, he should be back in our lineup soon. Like, they're not going to need to put him under the knife or anything, are they?
Yeah, no, nothing like that. He should be back, which I think will be grateful. Pittsburgh will be grateful to have some pitchers back.
Yeah. Yep. Start stocking that rotation here again.
So that's it for the medical updates.
Okay. Well, thanks for those medical updates, Dr. Garrett. We appreciate that. And we'll look forward to hearing from you next week as well. Now, before we get to Gerrit Cole, which we just mentioned, there's a couple things I want to talk about. It's been about 10 days or so since we last recorded, hasn't it, Ben?
It's been a little bit. The Gerrit Cole start was probably the night or so we should have come back for our weekly dose.
Yeah, that was
weekly
about
dose,
our week. So we're sorry for making you wait those extra couple days. But before we get to Cole again, I want to touch on the draft. The Major League Baseball draft was held during this period of time. And Pittsburgh, their first two picks, they drafted two high schoolers in the first round. They had the number 9 pick, which was their pick for failing to sign Mark Appel last year. And then they had the 14th pick overall. With their number 9 pick, they took high schooler Austin Meadows, who is an outfielder. He's one of those guys that they say, oh, he's a five tool. He's toolsy. He's got all these different tools. You're just not sure like how it's going to translate into baseball. And I guess for the sake of comparison, you heard a lot of that talk with
comparisons
with Bubba Starling was the last real guy I remember everybody talking about, like, oh, he's super toolsy. He's fast and he can throw hard. And and then you kind of look at Bubba Starling and he's had a rough go about translating that into success on the diamond. Same thing with Dominic Brown. Dominic Brown was one of those guys who for forever was, he was just considered the best prospect in baseball, had all these tools, but couldn't get it to translate. It took him a while to figure it out. And this year you've kind of seen how he's progressed. So that was our first pick was number 9, Austin Meadows. And then with our 14th pick, I was kind of shocked we took Reese McGuire, who was a prep catcher. He's considered to have the best catching arm in the draft. And the reason that I say I was shocked by that was because not only do we have Tony Sanchez in AAA, Russell Martin at the major league level, but also when you start getting down to the lower levels, we have Wyatt Matheson down there who, he's having a decent season, not a, spectacular, not a Stetson Alley type season,
no.
Not a 17 home runs before the All-Star break type season, but Matheson's holding his own. So I was kind of surprised to see us take Reese McGuire with our 14th pick, but and you can go see, actually, if you go to Pittsburgh Pirates website, if you scroll over their roster tab at the top of the website, one of the tabs that they have underneath the roster tab is their draft results, and you can go see all, I don't even know how many, probably 30, 40 players that they drafted. You can go see them all. We finally signed our first player today, who was our fourth round pick, I think, Cody Dixon. He was a left-handed pitcher. So he's the first of the signings from our draft picks. But moving on from the draft, Francisco Liriano threw 7 innings against Chicago during a day game last Friday. Pittsburgh blanked the Cubs 2-0, and that was their 10th shutout of the year already, which I believe at the time either has matched or I think it matched their shutout total from all of last season.
There you go.
So if you're wondering about the pitching, you know, there's been a definite improvement in that area. You know, our pitching and our defense is really carrying these Pirates a long way. You know, Liriano continued that bridge to Melanson and Greeley, who have been two of the best 8th and 9th inning guys in baseball during that, during this early part of the season. So, you know, it's nice to see us have a starter carry us to that part instead of kind of having to bridge the gap with some other guys before we get to Melanson and Greeley. Because for all the shutouts that we're throwing, I don't believe that we've actually had a complete game shutout in any of those. And I'll have to go look at that to double check, but I'm pretty sure none of those have been complete game shutouts so far.
That would be an interesting statistical oddity.
Yeah, having all of your shutouts and none of them are complete game shutouts. But you know that, hey, that's a testament to everybody's ability to pitch, I think. And then James McDonald, in his last rehab start for AAA Indy, he threw 77 pitches across 3 2/3 innings. And here's the real alarming stat. He allowed 7 stolen bases in those 3 2/3 innings. Jeez.
So it's a good bet that if James McDonald comes back to the big club, not going to be paired up with Michael McHenry too often.
That is not...
The track meet.
That'll make you wish for Rod Barajas all of a sudden.
Oh, that's, man.
So, you know, I honestly, I've been talking about this with a lot of different Pirates fans. I don't know what they do with James McDonald. You know, he's out of options, so you can't option him down there. Maybe he's one of those guys who just needs to go to the bullpen and work at one inning at a time. I don't know. And Hurdle hasn't really said a whole lot about either way about what's going to happen with him when he gets back. So,
which probably means he doesn't know.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be real curious to see what happens with him. You know, he's got great stuff. No one's doubting the talent, but it's just his ability to do it consistently and, you know, keep from imploding on the mound and battling himself night in and night out. But now we're getting to the important part of this Pirates discussion, which is Gerrit Cole's start.
Oh yeah.
Which was like the most exciting thing to happen to me in the last like 15 years. I don't even know.
Well, it was also like one of the most exciting things to happen in Pittsburgh in the last 15 years, as identified by the line around the stadium.
Oh my God. The line.
The ridiculous traffic jam we were stuck in.
The traffic jam and the line around the stadium. Some people were there 40, 45 minutes early that were waiting in line, still didn't get to see the first pitch.
Yeah.
The organization actually apologized. Frank Coonley came out and apologized. And actually, we received an apology. You know, I emailed the Pirates and specifically said, like, hey, what's going on with this? You know, we missed the first pitch. We showed up to see this, and we couldn't get in. And we received a call from the organization apologizing. Still doesn't, you know, fix the fact that everybody missed the first pitch because they were unprepared. But I don't know.
See, originally, we were blaming the waitress at Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah.
For us missing the first pitch. But then we found out that these people that were there 40 minutes ahead of time missed the first pitch. So it wasn't her fault anymore.
Right.
She was off the hook.
The waitress is off the hook.
She was absolved because we wouldn't have been there more than 40 minutes ahead of time even without her shenanigans.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't have seen it anyway.
Wouldn't have seen it. So
we got to listen to it on the radio at least.
Yeah. And I watched it on my stat tracker. And he came out with the first at bat, blew a 99-mile-an-hour fastball by, I think it was Andres Torres, let off the game. And by the time we finally got into the stadium, you know, we got in there in time to see Cole's actual first at bat in the second inning. And, you know, I go to quite a few Pirates games a year. I can tell you, I've never felt an energy in the stadium like that.
It was electric.
Everybody is just tuned into what's happening in the stadium. Everybody's watching what's happening and interested. Like, you're not seeing people just sitting around playing on their cell phones and like, oh, when's this going to be over? Or when can I go get a beer from the vendors? Everybody was watching what was happening. Everybody was cheering at the same time about the same things that were exciting. And It's the closest. I've been telling people it's the closest I've ever felt to being like a Pittsburgh Steelers environment for the Pirates.
Right.
I went to opening day this year. It was nothing like that. There was no energy like that. It was intense. I loved it. I don't know how you felt as an Indians fan, but for me as a Pirates fan, that was great.
No, I loved it. And I think I told you during the game, it reminded me of a similar game I went to a few years ago, an Indians game. And the energy that night, it was during their year they made it to the ALCS, you know, when they had kind of the cards falling in their favor and the stadium was packed on a Friday night and they won on a walk-off late in the game. And it had that same energy. It reminded me of it, you know, from the moment I got in the stadium.
Yeah.
You could just tell in the concourse, it was packed and it was just, there was a buzz.
Yeah. I mean, it was phenomenal. It was the coolest experience I've had as a Pirates fan to date. I mean, it's been amazing. You know, it was amazing to see that happen. But getting into Cole's start, he was throwing, you know, you could tell he was throwing mostly four seam fastballs, which obviously that's a plus pitch for him. So that makes sense. But as I was watching the game happening and as I was watching the pitches, you know, on the stadium gun, his off speed stuff, his breaking ball was in the low 80s. And I was trying to sort it out in my head. I'm like, something can't be right. Because, you know, he throws that plus-plus fastball. And then he has a slider that on the 20 to 80 scale, everybody considers that 70 to 80 pitch as well. And his slider, I know his slider's, you know, 87 to 92. And I'm watching this, and these breaking balls are ripping off at, like, 82, 83, 84. And I couldn't piece it together in my head. I'm like, what is going on with this? So it turns out, you know, he threw mostly four-seam fastballs. He peppered in, I think it was, like, two or three changeups. And then all these breaking balls that were in the low 80s. So I hopped online onto Pittsburgh Pirates website to look at the game tracker, and all those pitches were registered as sliders. And so now at this point I'm really worried. I'm like, what the hell's happening to his slider? It's, you know, down in the low 80s. Like, I wonder if something's wrong with him now. Well, it turns out, and I saw this report on bucksdugout.com, Russell Martin said that Cole was throwing curveballs before the game and told him that he had more trust in his curveball and that had been working for him in the minors. So all those breaking pitches that he was throwing that were popping up on, you know, on Stat Tracker and were popping up on the Pirates website during the game log, that they were calling sliders,
were actually curveballs.
And now all of a sudden I can breathe a little easier knowing that something isn't broken with Garrett Cole,
except that he wasn't throwing his slider.
Yeah. But again, you know, if he already has confidence in that slider, if he's feeling good about it, and all of a sudden that day he realizes, hey, my curveball's working, I think that's a good adjustment for a kid like that to make.
Well, I'm not. It's definitely a great adjustment.
It really doesn't concern me unless all of a sudden he thinks his slider's totally gone. Right. You know, if that were the case, then I'd be, now we're down to a two-pitch pitcher. Oh, now we're in trouble. But, you know, that doesn't seem to be the case. It just seemed like his curveball was clicking when he was warming up. You know, he'd been working on it in the minors, so they tried it out. One of the things that I noticed during the start was that he was just completely deadly efficient with his pitches. I mean, he was working innings like 9 pitches, 12 pitches. By the time that he'd made it to the seventh inning, he was at, 72 pitches?
Yeah.
71 or 72 pitches at the you know, through 7 innings. You know, he was just awesomely efficient with his pitches. And I think a lot of people are alarmed because, you know, he only struck out 2 batters. And they're looking at him and they're kind of concerned, like, why, you know, he's got this awesome fastball and this wipeout slider. How come he's not striking out more guys? But if he's averaging 10 pitches an inning,
right,
and he's getting those ground outs and those, you know, those easy flyouts.
Well, and that's always the other side of the coin, you know, with a high strikeout pitcher.
Right.
That means you're going to rack up a lot of pitches.
Right. So, I mean, is the trade-off worth it? You look at his strikeout total down in Indy this year, and it was down, I think he was like at like 48 strikeouts across 67 innings. That's off the top of my head without looking at, I think that it was something along those lines where his strikeout total was way down. But I don't care as long as you're being efficient with those pitches. Right.
It's not very often you're going to strike someone out on 3 pitches.
Right.
And it's not very, you got to throw at least 3 strikes, we'll assume, to strike someone out. And major league hitters usually foul off, you know, a couple good pitches during an at bat. So if you're going to strike out the side, say, you're looking at a 20 pitch inning.
Right.
At least, probably.
So I'm okay with it. I think it only becomes a problem if, you know, his four seamer is considered, I guess, a flat pitch. It doesn't move a lot. You know, if people start squaring it up, then maybe all of a sudden we start looking at, let's start burying some of those sliders in the dirt. You know, let's start figuring out how we can start getting these guys to chase and work the count like that. But I like it. I'm okay with it. Just watching him pitch, he really seemed to understand the flow of the game, and he really seemed to understand, you know, we missed the first inning, but he worked his way out of a jam, you know, in those first two innings. So from what I've collected, it's been, you know, those first two innings, it was good to see him. And then at the end of his start, Hurdle came out, and it seemed like he had a really quick hook on him. You know, he gave up a double.
He had two runners on.
Yeah.
Because they had a 5-run lead, but he had two runners on and maybe one out or no outs.
I think he had one out. I think he made it through 7 in
right.
the third.
So. And the runners were at second and third.
Yeah.
And so there was a little bit of will he take him out? I mean, it was his second trip out, so we knew he was going to have to come out. But there was, when the runners made it to second and third, it was a little bit of, you know, is he going to give him the hook, or is he going to give him a chance to get out of it? I wasn't surprised that he gave him the hook, because he had a very good outing. He's got two guys in scoring position, one hit, and all of a sudden the Giants are back in the game. Now, it turned out that the Pirates bullpen gave up one of those runs, but they did get out of the jam eventually. And it was kind of a quick hook, because he was still at a low pitch count. And we even had the discussion in the previous inning. I think it was Dr. Garrett mentioned what the pitch count was coming out of the sixth. And you and Dr. Garrett both predicted that he would go two more innings. And I said, well, that depends how it goes. And the only reason I said that is because, although starters typically go 100 pitches, I just had this thought in the back of my mind, who knows what kind of adrenaline drain he's on right now. You know what I mean? Like, you see those kids in their first start, all of a sudden at 80 pitches, it's like, man, I don't have it anymore.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Usually I got 20 more pitches than me, but not tonight. And I think Hurdle, he was not going to wait around to see if
to
that was
see
the
what
case.
Was going to happen. That's exactly
like, what
no, it was.
No, I'm
going
to get you out of there before you lose this.
Right.
You know?
And
I want it to be a good outing for you.
Right.
So let the bullpen finish it for
and
you.
And if you watch enough baseball games, you can kind of tell when a game gets to a point where it's either we're going to let this guy stay in and see what happens, whether it's good or bad. And it seemed like it got to that point in the game where, mm-hmm. like, this game's going to swing
either
one way or the other.
Either Garrett Cole's going to get out of this,
or
the,
like,
Giants are going to get right back in this game, and it could get real tight.
Yeah. And so, you know, I didn't mind. And Hurdle even said, you know, like, oh, it's his first start and however many he's going to have in his career, you know. And you think about it in context of that, and, yeah, let's take him out, bring in Watson, let's see what we can do from there. And you
well,
know,
no, the, I definitely think it was the right decision.
The strategy, it you know, it worked for the Pirates, so.
You want him to leave on a positive note.
Yeah.
It would have been nice for him to finish the inning and leave on that kind of note.
Right.
But it's better to have him leave with the lead and a healthy lead, you know. And he got a standing ovation as he walked off.
And the ovation, that was when I started to get goosebumps. Like, I'm still, I feel the adrenaline pumping right now talking about Garrett Cole. Like, it was just so cool. Like, my mind's racing a mile a minute thinking back to it. But when he left the game, when Hurdle came out to pull him out, the stadium stood up and clapped, like, all the way through Tony Watson's first warm-up pitch. I mean, it was Garrett Cole, and they wanted the ovation. That's what they were clapping for. You know, he went in the dugout, and everybody was still standing up and clapping. And you
they
know,
want Cole, the curtain call.
Yeah, and Cole didn't come out. You know,
yeah.
He didn't tip his cap or anything. And he said post-game, he's like, I know what they wanted. This game wasn't about me. You know, I just wanted to come in and do my thing. But, you know, he said it's an awfully nice gesture in your first game to get something like
I'm
that.
I'm pretty sure I was the first one up in our section.
Were you?
Because I was already, you know, as I just explained, I was kind of thought maybe he wasn't going to make it out of that inning. And I saw Hurdle come out of the dugout, and the pitching coach had already been out. And I was just like, oh, nope, he's not finishing this off. And I jumped up, and I'm pretty sure I was the first one.
You were number one in section 107.
Yeah.
That was your moment.
That was my moment. It was me clapping for Garrett Cole.
So Garrett Cole start, again, one of the most positive experiences I've had at PNC Park. It was absolutely phenomenal to be there and experience that. I think it was kind of interesting from a baseball perspective to see how Garrett Cole really survived on two pitches through that first start. You know, he really didn't have to dig deep, you know, with that changeup, and he wasn't even throwing his second best pitch with his slider. So that's just kind of something to keep an eye on. And and make sure that we see whether that's something he starts to incorporate in his next start. I think it's just worth noting, since that's kind of his MO is fastball, wipeout, slider. So,
I mean, what do you think the Pirates are going to do after a start like that? You know, supposedly, as we heard from Dr. Garrett, Wandy's injury isn't serious. We would hope that AJ Burnett's injury is not serious. We hope that Charlie Morton, who's making his recovery from Tommy John, you know, makes a strong comeback from that. What are they going to do with they're handling the adversity well, but what's going to happen to this rotation, you know, if Gomez comes back, Wandy comes back, Burnett comes back?
You know, and the easy answer is Gerrit Cole has options.
Right.
The organization said that he wasn't quite where they wanted him to be at, but they had to call him up based on...
because they didn't want to call James McDonald up, essentially.
based on what they needed, you know, Gerrit Cole, it was the right time for them to call him up based on what they needed. I honestly, I don't know what you do. I really think it's going to be a mess to try and deal with. I don't know whether James McDonald's a guy that you can move into the bullpen and try and work through his struggles one inning at a time. And there's really been no indication from Hurdle about what they're going to do when these guys start coming back. I think Genmar Gomez is an easy guy to move back to the bullpen because that's sure. where he started the year. But, you know, I don't know. You would assume that Morton's here to stay, you would think. And so I'll be interested to see over the next couple of days what starts happening when these guys come back myself, because I honestly, there's been no real indication of what they're going to do, and I don't really even know what makes sense to do as an organization. So...
I guess that's why Terry Francona tends to say these things have a way of sorting themselves out.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, somebody else gets hurt, somebody becomes ineffective.
Like I said, I look at it, if I were looking at it, Gerrit Cole has options.
Right.
Nobody else does. So I don't know. I don't know.
I understand.
I don't know what else you do if you have all of these guys other than just say, hey, we're going to cut bait with you and go with what we think is our best rotation, which is your rotation's your best rotation if Gerrit Cole's in it. That much sure. I can tell you.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see once these guys start coming back where they start slotting them in.
So, I mean, and on that point, you know, I was sitting there in the stadium and it's full and the atmosphere is electric. And you kind of wonder, maybe it's because I look at it from the perspective of a Cleveland fan. You know, you see the way the fans react every time McCutchen comes up to the plate. And you see the way they react towards Gerrit Cole. What is their long-term plan? You know, like we hear a lot of talk about the window of contention for small market teams. Obviously, that window is beginning to open for the Pirates. This is their time.
Yeah.
You know, Gerrit Cole's ready. McCutchen's here, Neil Walker's here. We've got some complimentary pieces like a Pedro Alvarez, who has his flaws, but brings a lot of things to the team. You know, Russell Martin kind of characters, you know, those kind of guys. What's the Pirates' long-term plan? Are they going to try to lock this down and ride it out? Are they going to shoot for that window and then sell off parts? I mean, maybe it's sacrilegious to talk about it at the beginning. I've just seen the end of the window. I've seen it slam shut so many times on the Indians' fingers that I'm curious, I guess, how it's going
to
end.
Well, you look at with Pittsburgh, and they've got Andrew McCutchen locked up to that team-friendly deal already. And you now all of a sudden you're assuming Gerrit Cole is going to be up to stay. If not, you know, if maybe they send him back down, he'll be back up at some point this season, and then next year he's going to be in that rotation from the beginning.
Right.
All of a sudden next year you're going to be looking at Jameson Taillon doing the same thing that Gerrit Cole's doing this year, as long as he progresses. I think you've got to start looking at kind of what the Rays formula is with locking up their players to those long-term deals like the Evan Longoria, you know, and they did that with Andrew McCutchen. And now you're going to be, so you're with McCutchen for another, you know, 4 years after this year, and then you're going to have Gerrit Cole for 5 years and Jameson Taillon for 5 years. And I think starting next season is when the real, for me at least, next year was always the year. For the last couple years, I've been saying that Pittsburgh's really going to have to start to look to contend, because you're going to have Cole up for that whole season. You're probably going to be calling up Taillon at some point next year to be in that rotation. You've got McCutchen locked up. So I really think next year is the year where they have to start looking at do we start bringing in pieces now to help us win where we need them? You know, so that's what I think Pittsburgh's going to try and do with everybody that they can. And there was talk about it with Marte already. Like, how soon do we do this with Marte? Like, when do we need to lock Marte up to that team-friendly deal? And I think when you look at it in the long term like that, if you think you're going to be competing over the next couple of years, you want to do that with a player like Marte. So next year, I think, will be a real big year for Pittsburgh as far as if they're going to be contending and serious contenders. Then just the last couple things that I wanted to touch on. We already talked about Charlie Morton making his debut tonight, and it looks like he's getting, it's tough to see from across the room, but he's getting knocked around a little bit. But, you know, he's back in there eating up some innings, hopefully. The offense over the last two games, so the two games that we went to, or the game that we went to with Garrett Cole's debut, and then the following game against San Francisco, Pittsburgh has scored 20 runs over those two games, 8 runs for Garrett Cole and then 12 runs yesterday. So they're getting blanked by Matt Cain right now, but, you know, their offense is at least showing some signs of life. A couple roster moves. Jose Contreras was released to make room on the 40 man for Charlie Morton. So
bon voyage.
Bye bye. And we already touched on John McDonald being traded to Cleveland for a bucket
of
balls.
He's my property now.
So you guys can enjoy John McDonald, so you don't have to let some kid rot away on the bench.
Juan Diaz gets to play now.
Yeah.
Back in Columbus, but he gets to play. I saw him eating a lot of seeds in the dugout.
Yeah, I'm sure
a couple days before John McDonald.
I'm sure he was enjoying counting the seagulls on the field. Then the last thing, Stetson Alley, 17th home run.
My. Can they just promote him already?
They need to. They really, well, honestly, like he has nothing left to prove
to continue at that level.
You got to bump him up to altitude.
Obviously mastered pitching at that level. You know, hitting the pitching at that level,
right.
I should say. Not cuz I don't want to get anyone confused with James Italian or Stetson Alley rather has mastered pitching. That's not the case. He's mastered hitting the pitching at that level. He really needs to be promoted.
Yeah, which I'm assuming Pittsburgh will be doing here pretty soon.
Yeah.
So that's it for the battling Buccos. We spent a lot of time on Garrett Cole, but it was definitely a good experience for the Tri-State staff to be there and see something like that. So kind of cool. Let's move on to the Tribe. Jason, what's going on over in Cleveland?
Well, you know, we're coming off a real tough stretch here in Cleveland. The Tuesday night game where we saw Garrett Cole, Andy can attest, I was watching the scoreboard like a hawk, hoping the Indians were going to get off the hook of their 8-game losing streak, which they finally did that night, off a great start from Corey Kluber. But going into Texas on Monday, I believe they were 4-14 in their last 18 games. Before that stretch, they were 2.5 games up on Detroit. And when they went into Texas, they were 5 games back of Detroit. Now, a lot of that it's kind of skewed because they got swept by Detroit. You know, so they have the misfortune of playing Detroit, which totally, you know, manipulates those numbers. So they're headed into Texas on Monday with Kazmir, Kluber, and Jimenez scheduled to start. And as a Tribe fan, you're not thinking it's going to get any better here. Texas, the Indians play historically pretty poorly in Texas. And you're riding in on the backs of Kazmir, Kluber, and Jimenez. But, you know, that's why they play the games, because they won the series. And Kazmir put up a nice start. Nick Hagedone kind of let that get away from the team. But I think that trio, and this is very rough, because I did this at a moment when I was at work, restricted from accessing Baseball Reference or any sports websites. But from what I could remember, it seemed like those starters put up about 20 innings with 5 runs against Texas, in Texas.
You got to be feeling pretty good.
So you got to be feeling pretty good about that. The main contributor to that was Corey Kluber, who put up 8 innings and 1 run Tuesday night for them to finally get off the hook and get that win. That being said, there's some things I'd like to talk about regarding the Indians. There's just this kind of we've seen the worst of Cleveland fandom over this 4-14 stretch. it's gotten so ugly. You know, like the Plain Dealer literally has a Believe-O-Meter that they're using to determine how much they believe in the Indians.
I love it.
I'm like, what is this?
I love it.
Can we get a Believe-O-Meter on the Browns? And I mean, I hear these people, you know, they go in this slide and everybody's like, what happened to all the veteran leadership of Jason Giambi and Nick Swisher? Teams are going to lose games. You're going to have losing streaks. My feeling looking at this team, it's a 500 team, you know?
I've been saying that since the beginning of the year.
It's a 500 team. So the fact that they were 3-4, maybe 5 games over 500, there's a correction coming, and it just came. You know, now they're maybe 3 games under 500, 2 or 3 games under 500. If I'm the Indians, and I'm pretty confident that this is the way Terry Francona and Chris Antonetti feel, I'm just trying to hang on to 500. If I can hang on to 500 at the trade deadline, then let's talk shop. You know, that's what I'm going for, because I can't imagine they look at this rotation and they're like, oh yeah, we can compete this year. you know, I mean, I think they think they can compete for a wild card spot.
Right.
As long as they hang around 500 and can make a trade, you know, and I don't think that trade necessarily has to be a pitcher, by the way. I think if you add an impact bat, and like you can get Nick Swisher out of the four hole where he really doesn't belong, you know, you could go to a little bit of those Indians teams that just outmashed everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the offense isn't there right now because they're lacking that real impact guy. They're lacking that Jim Thome, that Manny Ramirez, that guy you just don't want to face.
Yeah.
Carlos Santana is the closest they have to that guy. And I think that's shown by the fact he's got a high 800 OPS. He's got the highest OPS on the team by far. But they need another guy like that. You know, they're refusing to put Santana in the four hole because they don't want to put that much pressure on him.
Right.
Which I understand. So they need to go out and get a veteran bat to put in that spot if Nick Swisher's not going to be able to handle it, which it's not really Nick Swisher's best place in the four hole. 3, 2, 5, or 6, I think those are better spots for Nick Swisher. But to compare this team to 2011 or 2012 is just, it's so ridiculous. I mean, we're talking, this team in 2013 is orders of magnitude greater talent. It's not even on the same planet. I mean, imagine if Asdrubal Cabrera went out with a strained quadricep. Those teams would just fold up shop, you know? He'd be replaced by someone like Adam Everett or Brent Lillibridge.
Yeah.
You know, no, he's being replaced by Mike Aviles. And of course, Mike Aviles' warts are showing by playing shortstop every day. There's balls he's getting to, you're like, oh, I think Asdrubal Cabrera would have made that play. But he's also hitting home runs and
he's not just a warm body.
Yeah, he's contributing to this team, yeah. You know.
Now, let me ask you, do you think that these expectations were lumped on them because of the way that they started out the year?
Well, they actually started out the year really badly. Like, I heard Terry Francona addressing that question to ESPN the other night. And you got to remember, the beginning of the year was pretty ugly. They just really had that nice stretch the end of April through May. You know, that's when they were playing their best baseball. I think the expectations got lumped on them in a lot of ways because of the money they spent. You know? And the Indians fans are finally like, all right, now they're spending some money, they're going to win. Because that's what they've been complaining about for the last 10 years.
Right.
Well, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
You know, they work themselves into a little bit of a hole. And you can't just drop $100 million on the table and you're magically out of it. Ask Brian Cashman. You know, he knows the answer to that question better than anyone. So, and I think they suffered the injury bug a little more than people give them credit for. You know, There hasn't been too many games where that starting nine has played together consistently. Michael Bourne was out. Carlos Santana was out. Jason Kipnis was out. I mean, it just seems like there's always someone missing. Now Asdrubal Cabrera's out. You know, then Chris Perez gets hurt. Vinny Pastano gets hurt. Zach McAllister gets hurt. It's like every time someone kind of finds their footing, you know, the lineup gets shaken down. And I think it shows the depth of this team. And back to my first point, that this is not 2011 or 2012. Because, you know,
if that were the case, they'd be in a lot worse shape.
They'd be in the cellar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you wouldn't have Ryan Rayburn and Mike Aviles to come and Yan Gomes
to plug in
to this lineup. You, Corey Kluber was not that this kind of pitcher.
Well, let me ask you about, speaking of injuries, Carlos Carrasco. Where do you think he fits into Cleveland's plans?
I think it's so hard to say because it's like we're talking about Stetson Alley, but at AAA.
Yeah.
Carlos Carrasco has nothing left to prove at AAA.
He's one of those 4A players.
I mean, he can dominate at AAA. And he has dominated for a month in the major leagues, the month preceding his Tommy John surgery. He was just electric. I remember watching him pitch against the Yankees then, and it was lights out. Like the game was over from the first pitch. Just like Carlos Carrasco is not going to allow a run. Just might as well fold up and go home. But the way the Indians rotation is pitching, you know, so what I'm saying is I think Carlos Carrasco just needs to take his lumps. I think he needs to find out how to get it done in the major leagues. He figured out how to get it done in AAA. Great. Wonderful. That's not really doing anything for us. He needs to figure out how to get it done in the majors. The problem is, okay, whose spot does he take? If we're going to assume that Zach McAllister's injury is not serious, he's not taking Zach McAllister's spot. He's not taking Justin Masterson's spot. After all you've been through with Ubaldo Jimenez, you're not giving up that spot right now.
Getting your money's worth out of him.
So now you're down to Kazmir and Kluber. Corey Kluber, he just almost shut out the Rangers over 8 innings. I don't think I'm ready to send Corey Kluber back for Carlos Carrasco to watch him take his lumps. I watched Corey Kluber take his lumps last year, and he's figured out how to get it done. I think eventually he's going to take Kazmir's spot, just because although the idea of Kazmir making a miraculous comeback fascinates me and tickles my fancy.
You're also a very realistic person.
I'm too realistic to get too wrapped up in that. And I see that Scott Kazmir can be effective the first time through a lineup or maybe the second time. And I see this glaring left-handed weakness in our bullpen. It just seems like he's destined for that. I don't know if they're to that point yet, but he's up. Carrasco's up.
Right.
They're going to get around the suspension by the seat of their pants. I don't know. Do you send him back? I mean,
see, these are the same questions I ask about Pittsburgh. I don't know what makes sense to do with your rotation. And like you said, I think you just wait long enough and eventually something will, that, you know, rear its head and you'll figure out how it shakes down.
And that's essentially what Terry Francona's answer was to the plain dealer. Like, these things have a way of sorting themselves out.
Yeah.
Either Zach McAllister's not going to come back right away, or Scott Kazmir's production is going to go off a cliff.
Right.
Or, you know, Corey Kluber's going to return to what people thought he was. Something will happen, and it'll work itself out, I guess.
Now, here's something that I'm curious about, because you actually wrote an article about this the other day and posted it on our website. What's going on with Lonnie Chisenhall?
Well, he's absolutely mashing in AAA. I got the stats pulled up here. He's hitting .402 with a .473 on base and a .707 slugging.
Woo.
He's hit 6 home runs, 24 RBIs, 6 doubles, and 2 triples. And since the real knock on Lonnie Chisenhall was that he had horrible plate discipline, you might be interested to know he struck out 18 times and walked 11. So that'll get it done, I think. That's more what we're looking for. On the flip side, Lonnie Chisenhall, I believe, has made 8 errors at third base since being sent back to AAA. I kind of feel the same way about him as I do Carlos Carrasco. I've seen enough of Lonnie Chisenhall in AAA, and I think this is a .500 team. I think Lonnie Chisenhall needs to come up, play third base, or at least DH. But he needs to be on this team, and he needs to play a lot. Because
let him figure it out.
We have to determine whether Lonnie Chisenhall is going to play third base next year and the year after that and the year after that, or whether we need to sign Mark Reynolds, or whether we need to find a third baseman.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what needs to happen. This team isn't going, as it's currently constructed, not going to go to game 7 of the ALCS.
Right.
So let's get Lonnie Chisenhall here and see what shakes out, you know? And if he's playing bad defense, then let Mark Reynolds play third base. If he's playing worse defense than Mark Reynolds, then let Lonnie DH. He's hitting better than Jason Giambi.
Right, yeah.
You know? I think Giambi has his place on the team, but I think he's kind of getting exposed because they're a little short. And they're
having to give him too many at-bats.
They're a little gun-shy playing Yan Gomes at DH because they got burned so many times in the beginning of the year DHing their catcher that they don't want to do that again. But, the only other thing to talk about is is Chris Perez.
I can tell by the tone in your voice. Perez and his good life choices.
And I don't even know what to say. I mean, I don't want to get into a discussion about the morals of smoking marijuana.
Right. Here's what I'll say. And this is everybody's like PC answer to problems like this. Like, you hear the same thing with steroids. So you're like, oh, he's innocent until proven guilty. He's innocent until he goes to a court of law and you should give him his day and yada, yada, yada. Listen, man. There was weed shipped to his house.
I'm pretty sure the dog didn't order it.
In his dog's name. I might not be a juror on that case, so I might not get to have my say in court about whether I think Chris Perez is guilty or not. But I will tell you, there was weed shipped to his house, addressed to his dog. So,
yeah. I mean, it's just...
So that's Chris Perez.
My frustrations with Chris Perez have been on display on this podcast all year. And this does nothing to change my opinion of him. When healthy, he can be a very effective pitcher. He makes some of the stupidest decisions of anyone I've ever run across. And the joke of it all, okay, this team, this organization has been searching for a dominant closer since...
Paul Shuey? I don't even know.
Since I think Mike Jackson.
Yeah.
I think he's their last true dominant closer. I mean, I don't want to say Jose Meza was the dominant closer since he blew Game 7 of the World Series. Yeah. But, I mean, Bob Wickman, Joe Borowski, Kerry Wood in his elder days.
Yeah.
None of those guys were dominant closers. This team was craving a dominant closer. So you would think someone like Chris Perez would get the longest leash you've ever seen on someone, right? Because he has the chance to be that guy. But his personality has just done the opposite. Like,
yeah.
I mean, the fans just, they don't give him any room, you know? And I can't wait to see when he takes the field again.
Oh, that'll be interesting to
what
see.
What happens.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see when he blows his next save.
Yeah.
I mean, the man already had to delete his Twitter because he was getting trashed so hard on there. That was before he got arrested for having weed shipped to his dog.
Yeah. So one can only imagine how the city of Cleveland will respond to that.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Well, good luck with you guys trying to figure out the end of that bullpen. Before we wrap up today, we want to give just a real quick Seawolves shout out. The Seawolves will be home starting next Tuesday, June 18th, for a 3-game series against New Britain. They're on the road again until the 27th, so if you want to see the Seawolves next week is your best chance to do that. So make sure you get out there and give the Wolves some support. It's a howl of a good time.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's going to wrap up today. We'd like to, again, thank our listeners and ask if you're listening to us on iTunes to please give us a rate and review. Those rates and reviews drive up our popularity, and we love having more people to talk to. We'd like to thank Dr. Garrett Britton for joining us this week and Jason Ruggiero for being the super producer that he is. If you want to check us out on the interwebs, you can at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter, @tristatebb. And you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. So again, for Garrett and Jason, this is Andy Burdick, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week. He fought so hard.